from the Bills' famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Behind me, keeping track of our picks, our time, helping us to look up any pertinent information we might need, he is the Poet Laureate of the Blockout Sports Pod. You know him as Mr. Electricity. We call him Whiteboard Jody. Over my right shoulder at the high top table is the big fella, the Tuna Country Matt Kempf, and bellied up to the bar.
Is he cradling a baby right now?
I'm thinking about giving him a de facto fan certificate for Indiana football this year, since his entire coaching staff wasn't good enough for Indiana. So they made do with what they could do at Alabama.
And we appreciate it.
He is the fabulous one, Freddie Bender.
Thank you. Thank you there, Travis. Got my Pete Rose jersey on. R.I.P. Charlie Hustle. Added a little gold, a little platinum with it.
Just one chain tonight. Light night for you.
Got the big Bama hat
on. He didn't want to take away from the memory of Pete Rose with extra bling.
You should have wore the white snakeskin cowboy boots.
You got to keep add a little Ellie De La Cruz with Pete, you know.
And the big bracelet that Pete always wore.
Yeah, Pete was a rebel, so
he was something.
I think he would approve the platinum.
We will certainly. I wanted to talk a little bit later on about the fact that we lost Pete Rose this week. A lot of different things are going on in the world of sports, in the world of entertainment. It's been kind of a busy week for the Grim Reaper, I'm afraid.
Yes.
I just saw today that John Amos from Good Times and Coming to America and all that, he passed away. Who else did we lose here?
Isn't just Happy Gilmore.
Chris Christopherson.
Of course. Chris Christopherson, one of my all-time
Dikembe Mutombo
favorite guys, yep.
In lighter news, Jimmy Carter turned 100 today, and he woke up. So
good for him.
Good for you, Jim. Yeah.
Way to go, Jimmy.
You got some Billy Beer over there, Tuna?
What's Billy Beer?
Is
that Jimmy Carter beer?
You don't know what Billy Beer is?
I don't. I'm stupid. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a quick story about Billy Beer. My wife's grandfather, George M. Getz, you see his name back there behind the bar on the thing hanging underneath the television.
Mm-hmm.
He was the president of Falls City Brewery, okay?
That explains a lot of the decor in this basement.
Yes. Billy Carter was Jimmy's kind of, well, I don't know, you can't call him a ne'er-do-well, but he was, do you remember when...
Do you know what a ne'er-do-well is?
Is that hanging from your Christmas tree?
Yeah, you kiss somebody underneath of it?
Do you remember when Bill Clinton was the president, his little brother, Roger, was always, like, getting into trouble and, you know, showing up in the police blotter drunk or whatever? Well, Billy appointed himself as, what did he say? He was the United States' greatest beer drinker.
Hmm.
And he became known kind of for that.
He's a big old boy.
To build off of that, Fall City had the idea that they would come out with a beer called Billy Beer and have Billy Carter be, you know, the president's brother, be the guy who talked up Billy Beer. Now,
sounds like a smart move.
Like the two guys on Bartles and James.
The unfortunate thing about it is,
go for a Bartles and James right now.
Wine coolers.
Yeah.
By all accounts, Billy Beer is one of the worst tasting beers ever produced. By all accounts,
that's why you chug it so you can't taste it.
Now,
it's good cold.
Let's go 35 years into the future. I'm talking to Jenny's grandfather, who is no longer with us now, But he was a very, very dignified man. Always, to the day he died, get up, put on a suit jacket, bow tie, always put together, hair perfect, all this. So I'm talking to him, I think at a Thanksgiving one time. And I said, Mr. Goetsch, you know, it must have been a fascinating life that you led, having been the president of Fall City. And he knew when you went into his basement, he had pictures of himself with the Pope and Muhammad Ali and presidents and governors and all this stuff. And he said, Travis, let me tell you something. I said, yeah. He said, I started working at Fall City in the 1930s in the mailroom. He said, I worked my way from the mailroom to be the president of Falls City. He was president there for over a decade. And he said, the only thing those sons of bitches will remember me for is Green Light and Billy Beer. And I never heard him say a curse word before. I never heard him say one after. But that let me know how he felt about having been the guy who put the rubber stamp on Billy Beer. And I actually have, as a matter of fact.
He's got one.
That's a mug, yeah.
Here's a mug.
Okay.
It's a great logo.
And I have several cans.
I figured Billy Gillespie would get a beer named after him at some point.
That'd be moonshine.
Or bourbon.
But anyway,
oh, shine.
Want to remind everybody, and we did, I did see that finally putting a little bit of activity on our social media caused some people to actually pay attention to our social media, which funny how that works. We had a great
picture.
Gotta
be social on social media.
We had a great picture of Fred on there that got some traction this week. If you are not yet following us, follow us on Twitter, X, at Blockout Pod. Type in Blockout Sports Pod into your Facebook search engine, and you can find anything that we would happen to put out from that standpoint. Now, with that being said, I thought to start the show, since I kind of buried the lead last week and I made a big joke about it, I thought we'd go ahead and let Freddie talk about the Alabama-Georgia game.
To get us done talking
on
about
either the right or the wrong foot.
I got one thing to say before he starts. Our timekeeper has not put up our time yet. Yep. So I have no idea.
We started at 8:03.
Our clock
it died.
Oh my
god. Needs
gosh.
To be charged up. Okay. So we're going to keep Mr. Electricity back here. He's like, you know,
he's
like
a big WNBA guy. He will not pay attention to us.
When the
I'm winning.
When the scoreboard goes out during the game and they say the officials are now keeping time on the field. Mr. Electricity is going to be keeping time on the field. Freddie, just your initial thoughts, and then we'll break down the minutiae of the game.
Wow, getting ready for the game, kickoff. Everybody, I got my crew with me. A couple Georgia fans, Martin and Irina, were watching the game. The only word I can say is buzzsaw. Like, I don't think I've ever seen even a Saban team come out against a quality opponent and just rip roar through it. 23 plays, 28 points, 28-0. And I'm talking about offense, defense, special teams, the crispness of the tackling and the energy and the speed, first moves, cuts. It seemed like every time our receivers caught even a jet sweep or something, they actually were – they're already running before they even catch the ball on a little move where we were just a step ahead or maybe two steps of everything Georgia was doing, including the play calling. It was astounding to me, and I really do believe that there's a lot of Bama fans down there that are saying that they've never seen a Saban team come out like that against a top five opponent. Think of so many Bama teams that start sluggish. Well, you know, some of them games we won, 9-3, 6-3 back in the day. But, man, just to come out there and dominate like that, it really blew me away. I know Wentz didn't have time to even figure out what was he didn't even have time to figure out what he was doing. You know what I'm saying? Carson Beck, he just seemed like they were behind a play. I mean, what do you think, Tim? I mean, and then I'll get into when Georgia came back. That was just small chunks. So they changed the momentum. And as we talk all the time, Tuna, we think that college football is a lot based on momentum.
I think this was Kane Womack's coming out party. We're the way he dialed up to shut it down.
Oh, man.
But it makes me question, because you look at Georgia and what they've done so far this year. I think we all question their offensive production going into this game. Right. And this just kind of solidified it in that first half. I don't know where they're going to get offensive production from. It's getting there. That second half, adjustments were made by Georgia to really
score the
ball.
Kirby out adjusted us at halftime.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That was it was a tell
of
two halves.
It was a learning curve for our cup, for DeBoer.
I think he was
like, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to come in here and just.
And a lot of that I'm going to put. Like I was talking outside, Jalen Milroe was two different players in that game. First half Jalen Milroe and second half Jalen Milroe. First half Jalen Milroe maybe looked like the best quarterback that's played in college football in the last 10 years.
Right.
And then he looked like Jalen Milroe last year pre-South Florida in the second half. So if he didn't have Ryan Williams, how old's he again?
He's 17.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. yeah. He had a point where you could just throw the ball up and you knew that Ryan Williams was going to get it.
Right. And
what's he say? There's no 50-50 ball. When the ball's in the air, I'm getting it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, the plays at the end, the ballerina jumps that I've never seen anyone doing anything like that.
Body control, man. I don't understand how these people have athletic ability that.
But, I mean, he's a big time. And look, guys, during the game, I went back and listened to what I said. I was dead wrong all the way around.
No,
I said it was going to be I knew it was going to be two heavyweights, but I had 13-10, low-scoring game. I thought Malachi Starks would – I thought the freshman might have too much pressure on him, and Malachi Starks would shut him down. It was just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, he ran two all-SEC corners right into each other on that game winner. But I thought we were talking about this earlier. We got a lot of freshmen running around there, dude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God dang.
There's a lot of talent on that
there's
team.
There's a lot of talent, man. They're covered. So to look back and everyone think that we didn't do a good job on the transition, man, these guys look well coached.
I think the thing that got me is we talked about it during our preseason show where we talked about Bama, how it's going to look a little bit different with the speed as opposed to the size that we were used to.
Right.
Well, we know that Georgia has the biggest line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball in college football. And it's just almost absurd that, how big they are. Bama did not look small compared to them. They were big and fast.
Right.
And I think you add the speed. I think that's what impressed me the most was Bama's line of scrimmage in that game on both sides.
And you got to give credit to Nick Sheridan. Okay, this guy was at IU, tight ends coach. And in the first half, I mean, the plays that he was running, they were – I mean, hell, I was sitting in the garage bar watching. I was on my heels. I mean, everybody was on their heels. I mean, that pass play when he came around, I mean, dude, jet sweeps, all kinds of – I mean, we just had them off balance. Like you wouldn't
It was
believe.
A lot of window dressing for some basic plays, I thought.
Right.
You know, a lot of motions and movements.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah.
And I just really thought that, I mean, hell, we somehow got 80 yards rushing. But the rushing wasn't the highlight of the game whatsoever. Obviously, Milroe had his own rushing, which was I had to be close to,
I think it was 115 or something like that, wasn't
it? Yeah. But I did. I just was kind of off on everything, and it was a totally. I mean, it's one of the best games that you're ever going to see. I know everyone pumped it up like it was the game of the century. I'm not quite sure why, but it was a huge game. But I don't think it was game of the century. But
I think the thing that made it such a good game is that it wasn't sloppy.
Right.
It was a clean played game with just pure talent on both sides. And it was like one side, the talent showed up early. The second side, the talent and coaching showed up late.
Everybody should have left that game with their heads held high. No one lost a lot on that game. But what a win. What a win for our new coach. I think that relieves a lot of pressure off of him.
I think he won the weekend. Out of everybody in college football, I'd say that Kalen DeBoer won the weekend. And it's because he – Yeah, I mean, the pressure that's on you coming in and relieving Nick Saban or taking over for Nick Saban, and to get that off your back right away and you don't have to worry about it. He won the fan base over that day.
Right. Oh,
like any question marks that were put on Kalen DeBoer are over now. He can just move forward and coach football.
And he really proved to the national media, I think, that he didn't get sucked into the obvious narrative of it being a trap game right before they play Vanderbilt.
That's right.
It's always scary going to the job site, the construction zone.
So, I just I love the way DeBoer
put your hard hat on and pack your lunch pail.
I love the way he handles himself. On the, just he's just so, and the team follows that personality. Very laid back, never up too high, too down.
As a matter of fact, that play where he thought that, well, it was, he didn't think.
Oh, when he got mad.
It was clearly
a
pass interference.
Right.
And he went nuts, and even the announcers were like, yeah, you never see him do this. And he was right. I mean, it was a horrible missed call, but you're right. He's very much of that, which is why like him and Allen are total opposites of each other. Tom Allen, who he coached under at Indiana, for those that don't know, Tom Allen was like, if you made a tackle for 6 yards against Akron, he was stomping up and down, throwing his headset in the air and everything else. Kalen DeBoer, just next play.
Yeah, let's go.
And I love that.
So, all right, we'll move.
Wait a minute. Did you all see Saban? The camera went to him in the middle or the end of the first quarter.
I thought he was playing his bets. Yeah, he had his pen and his
Jerry goes, he's
on.
Either playing his bets or playing Tetris up there. Like,
I thought he was
Tetris
getting his
is
bets
fun. It's
in.
It's a good time.
You know, getting his West Coast bets in.
Now,
but anyways,
so
Roll Tide.
That was a great game. The outcome, I don't think anyone would have been shocked had it had Georgia won or Alabama won. So let's move to another game of local interest that was a bit of a shock. And as a matter of fact,
you're talking about Western Kentucky.
Well, I wasn't shocked. I was shocked that
they
didn't
win.
I'm kidding.
Well, Western barely lost.
But I noticed, and I'm sure you guys did too, that because I wasn't able to watch the game, I was in Bloomington at the Indiana game, and noticed that as soon as the Kentucky game started, it was a very Freddy text to get. As a matter of fact, I had to do a double take to realize it wasn't Freddy, it was Mr. Electricity.
Oh, this was a Fred take.
Sending the text after the second play of the game, announcing the fact that the game was over.
The team should walk
back
to Lexington.
We should walk back to Lexington. This game is over after two plays.
Billy Packer style.
I said, that is a Fred text if I ever saw one. And then I went, well, no, that's... And I fully expected to open up my phone and see that there was 2 minutes gone in the game and it was 21-0. I looked at it. It was nothing, I think. And I was like...
They scored the next play. Did you see what happened, though?
No.
For those of the play he's talking about, it's their first drive. They're playing that fast-paced tempo. The Ole Miss got on the line. Our nose tackle, nose guard, whatever position you want to give him, barely crossed the line in time at the half-yard line and still had his back to the quarterback when the ball was snapped. He was walking. He wasn't like there was no hustle in him whatsoever. If I were the coach, I don't care if that guy was a five-star first-team All-American. Go to the locker room and get your pads off and get dressed. Because yeah. That's just pure laziness, and that's not what I wanted to see to start a game. So at that point, yeah, I'm like, they've already given up.
Well, I thought they played exceptional. Their defense, their tackling. You know, teams in the SEC that do well, they just stand out. They tackle well. You know what I mean? I mean, that can stop so much play.
Buddy,
so
their front
yardage.
Seven may be one of the best in the SEC.
Yeah.
Top two, top three.
Yeah, athletic.
I'm being dead serious when I say that. They're like, big. They're athletic.
They're athletic.
Deion Walker
man.
Is a
oh
wall
God.
Of a human being.
Dude.
He's a wrecker. The kid with six fingers, J.J. Weaver, he's amazing. Octavius Oxendine. He does. Six on one hand, which I think should be illegal.
Yeah, they have a special glove made for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that isotoner?
Yes, isotoner. Okay. I don't think they make isotoners anymore.
I saw some today.
I think OJ put an end to isotoners.
No, that was a big gardening glove.
Oh, was it? Yeah. I didn't know. It looked like a driving glove. but anyway, I honestly, like Kentucky, look, their offense is what it is, but I don't think when you have a defense like that and you just are brutal as hell on teams – you can win a lot of games like that. And I thought that little running back, Carney.
Oh, not Wick. Okay.
He looked halfway decent.
I love the little guy, man. He is strong. And
what's up with Chip Traynham? The Mr. Doak Walker.
Yes.
Is he going to play at all?
I think he's still gimpy.
He broke his hand.
I know, but I haven't heard anything on him.
Yeah, I think he's probably leaving the team.
But you don't like the other running backs?
No, I mean, they're fine. I just think that Kentucky's identity.
Who's the little guy, Jody?
Forever.
Who's the little guy?
His name is Kate. I'm still stuck on our freshman that's not playing enough yet because every time he's on the field, he makes something incredible happen. Number 26.
Now, Dane Key is the most incredible person on that team.
Right.
And I'm going to give him credit because if I was a receiver, if I'm a college receiver, and I'm at UK, I'm transferring immediately because I know I'm going to get used somewhere else. And, like, you really have to earn it at UK. Like, he could have monster numbers at a school that throws the ball a little bit. The way that they play off, I don't know how they get offensive talent to commit there. I really don't.
He and Brown are two of the fastest receivers in all of college football.
I know. Brown.
Brown can leap, too, though.
He's just fast. But, like, he doesn't have – skill set.
Yeah. The cuts that
Dane Key is he's a NFL receiver. Like he
Agreed.
Goes and gets the ball. He runs clean routes. Like he actually is very talented. It's not just speed. So I don't know. I know he's from Lexington. That's probably his dad played at UK. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that probably plays into it. And they really lucked out there. I know he was close to going to South Carolina out of high school, like really close, but he
probably really wanted
I'm
to go after
about,
the last
I'm
game.
I'm talking about Will
South
Carolina Cox.
Game.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude. But no, you're right. You're right.
And that was without Maxwell Hairston, their top cornerback.
But don't you think that the Big V is playing better? The quarterback is playing better.
Talking about Rick Vanderpump.
He looked like he was actually moving around in the pocket. He just had a way better game, even though they didn't. I mean, dude, that pass to basically win it was insane.
Here's
that was a high pressure pass.
I'm not ever going to knock his skill set. I'm going to knock the offensive line for being completely different on pass protection and run blocking.
You've been calling that the whole year.
And it's like he is, for what he's dealing with back there,
right.
He's doing a great job. Like, if I was a UK fan, I'd be ecstatic about this kid's future.
And you got to realize, it's only his fifth start.
Yeah.
Our buddy Tom pointed out, too, during the game, he always rolls the same way.
He does.
And, dude,
he stares his receivers
on,
down
yeah,
too much.
Yeah,
it's he's got some issues. But the thing is, like,
no,
he's so
he's,
young.
He's
and
tough.
You can see the talent with that kid. He's right. got an arm. Like, he just does little things that he's going to have to break those habits. But I think he's going to be just fine.
And as you
forward.
Look down the line, man, you wish they had that, gosh, that damn Gamecock game back. But – dude, you look at their schedule. I mean, I don't think they're gonna have a problem with Auburn. I think they're.
They shouldn't.
They're.
I think
it's
yeah.
coming. You know, Florida at Florida is gonna be an interesting
we're
game. But
destroy.
God,
yeah, I think
that.
They're gonna smack Florida.
Gonna yeah, and them. Then and then you get to Tennessee. So.
That's a different.
That's a different monster. Yeah. I mean, for anybody.
He didn't even mention Vanderbilt. I don't know why.
You go do a little construction for the weekend.
You get to go play Bob the Builder for the weekend.
Honestly,
tool
I think
time.
You can circle
with
our
tuna.
Losses. You can
building
circle,
blocks to the season.
You can circle our losses, and we knew who that is with Tennessee and at Texas. But the one game that you circle you think's a win is just what Travis brought up. That Vanderbilt game is going to be a scary game.
Yeah.
They always give Kentucky hell, no matter what.
I think out of the games we think we're going to win or should win the rest of the season, that's the one that scares me the most.
It's because there's more room on the court under the coaches or under the goalposts. No,
should...
wait a minute. I'm sorry. That's bad.
That'd be awesome if Vanderbilt's football coached on the end
zones. That'd be nuts.
I mean, it seems like with the construction, they should have done that just for
yeah,
one season.
Just for one season.
Yeah.
So who do we bleed into this on this one? The Hoosiers or the Cards?
Well, I quickly was going to talk about Indiana.
Yeah, I would.
this past Saturday, Indiana had the opportunity to go 5-0.
Ooh.
Which they did.
Ooh.
Which it's the first 5-0 stretch for an Indiana football team since 1987. It's the first time they've started 5-0 since 1967. They scored 42 points again. They
crushing it in the fourth quarter.
Well, here's the thing about
always.
Here's the thing about Indiana. That is different from maybe any team that I've ever seen at Indiana. They were -4 in the turnover scenario. They hadn't turned the ball over all season long.
We completely jinxed our teams last
couple
week.
Almost back to back. You know,
it actually was. It was back to back passing attempts from Curtis Rourke were interceptions in the first quarter. Then he fumbled late in the game,
right.
which wasn't
but
really
early,
his fault.
But early, it was like that. It didn't bother them at all.
Well, so they turned the ball over 4 times, and realistically, in the fourth quarter, they were up 21 points and put in their second string before they gave up another touchdown, which meant nothing. But
they don't panic.
No, this team is so well coached, and they have a belief. It's not like a fake thing that I felt even when Tom Allen was there sometimes. This is just a team, and it's because, of course, they've got a bunch of guys that played a bunch of winning football at other places. And they came to, and they're just used to winning. These guys are used to winning, and Indiana is not. But these guys don't know that. They came from other places where they win. And one
of
the
a lot
great
of them
things,
from James Madison, right?
Yeah, one of the great things that I loved about Coach Cignetti,
the Dukes,
early before the season started, when they were asking him how he constructed his roster, and you know, he said, "I'm not necessarily looking at going after a guy with potential right now. We want to build our team with guys that have played and that have won." And it's worked for him everywhere he's ever gone, and it's certainly working for him at Indiana. They play at Northwestern on Saturday. Freddie and I will be at a sports book somewhere in Vegas watching that game.
With the Greek.
I cannot wait. There is a legitimate opportunity for Indiana to win 10 games this year. That's,
you're going to have to meet me in the mall, Travis, and this week, and we're going to go to that college store that has all the local teams, and I'm getting me an IU jersey or something.
And, by the way, Indiana is ranked in the...
Get some striped overalls.
In the AP Top 25 for the first time in... since preseason of 2021.
I would like to take a bow and say that I did predict Indiana to start out 6-0 this year.
Take a bow, you're welcome. Tuna. I mean, we saw the schedule.
Is that your segue into the fact that Louisville lost this weekend?
No. I was going to talk about Cignetti for a second, how I find him to be one of the most fascinating human beings I've ever seen. Because you talk about a guy whose personality does not match their appearance. You look at him, and you're like, this is like a nerdy, twerpy kind of guy. And then you talk, or he talks, and he's this like fiery, like asshole-ish kind of guy. And you're like,
yeah.
God, I'll follow this guy anywhere.
You know, like, it's so funny that you say that. a good friend of mine, Mike Fogarty, who I went to the Rose Bowl with.
Relation to John?
No, I'm not even going to make the joke I was about to make. Because he does listen to the show on occasion. He said that he had never seen Coach Cignetti, you know, before the season. He was hearing about how fiery this guy was and, like, people would bust through walls for him. And he goes, and then I saw him and he looked like an accountant.
Yeah, like a nerdy accountant.
Yeah, and he's like, how? And I said, dude, he doesn't, his aura isn't because of the way he looks. His aura is because of what he says and what he does. And his kind of single-minded focus is insane to me. And, I mean, Indiana, Scott Dolson knocked it out of the park with this hire, obviously. And there is a real... I also want to give a shout-out.
I would have loved to have, like, just been a fly on the wall in the interview process with him. Just to see how he sold himself to get the job. Like, I don't know.
Because I would assume...
He probably just was like, you're giving me this job. I'm not leaving here until you offer me a contract.
And I would assume that he told Dolson, like, everybody else is probably like, well, you know, we know it's going to be a challenge to build a winner here. I bet you he just walked in and he was like, I think we can win. I think we can win right now. I know how to do it, and we're going to do it. His press conference this past week, he said something to the effect of, well, I don't know why everybody's so surprised. I told everybody what we were going to do before the season started.
I love that.
And I mean, and that's just the way he is. I told everybody we were going to be good, and we, you know, had a chance to win every game and all this. But I wanted to give a shout out. There was a, and, you know, people that are fans of the SEC teams, like a Bama or a Georgia or Auburn, they can't fathom that, like, a Saturday football game isn't, it's not just crazed, you know, every seat is taken for the entire game, because that's just what they do at those. Indiana is not like that.
Right.
Indiana, for many years, the tailgate was much bigger than the crowd in the games. And even if they did have a crowd.
Yeah, you come in, you go out, you come in.
Right.
Which I love that, but.
But this past weekend with the weather the way it wasn't great. It rained pretty much the entire game. And it wasn't a sellout, but it was close. And everybody stayed. And it was loud, and it was cool. And it reminded me of when I was in college. When Mallory was the coach, those kind of crowds. And I just couldn't be more pleased that Indiana is where they're at. I cannot, I'm like, it's been a while. That COVID year was weird because it was a COVID year. And I had to watch those games on Zoom with my dad and
Colin.
Wait a minute,
that Bama championship counted.
Well, no. and
I'm kidding.
The Indiana season counted. I mean, some of my greatest memories of football, but there were no fans in the stands. Right, I didn't go to any of the games.
Right, right.
You know, I loved that team, but it wasn't the same. Now we can enjoy it the way like a regular season is supposed to be enjoyed. And I haven't been this excited about Indiana football in a very long time. And not to mention the fact that I think everybody down here that is sitting behind a microphone has won a lot of money betting on the Hoosiers.
And Hoosiers. You know what? I'm betting them again. I ain't worried about this trap game, Northwestern, whatever.
Well, we're going to talk about that later on. But
we got to get tuned on here.
Before we get into anything else, I did want to talk about another huge game, obviously, was Louisville and Notre Dame. It was another game I wasn't able to watch at least the first half. And I was following it on my phone, and I still haven't seen it, so I don't know exactly how it happened. But from somebody that didn't get to watch the beginning of the game, it sure seemed like if Louisville hadn't dug themselves that early hole, boy, they were every bit as good as them, right? For the rest of the ball game?
Yeah, I think they were better, in my opinion. I think that there was a lot of mistakes by both the players and the coaching staff in this one, which I was a little bit taken back. Brohm, I can't be, you know, say enough for what he's done with the University of Louisville football program, but for him to not have his guys ready, for him to not be ready, we've had constant mistakes from that coaching staff this season, whether it's communication with the quarterback, him not pressing the buttons, him not having a fourth down call ready to go, where you take a delay a game in the Notre Dame game, you've got to have that shit cleaned up. There's no excuse for any of that.
Those were some of the knocks on him at Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
That he would have a couple of games every year, and even in the big games, mm-hmm. where they didn't necessarily play poorly, but there were things at the beginning of the games where it took them too much time to kind of engage almost.
Yeah. I think all in all, I left this game. I know it was a loss, but I left this game still enthusiastic about the rest of our season because.
Oh, and I think you absolutely.
I love our quarterback, Tyler Shuck. I said, like, I'm growing more and more fond of him every week. He can make every damn throw. He was pinpoint accuracy that whole game. Notre Dame defensive line graded on PFF the highest of the weekend. So they completely dominated our offensive line. Yet we were still able to move the ball, and it's a lot because Tyler Shuck, what he was doing back there under pressure. Right. And we ran the ball pretty well.
Don't you just feel you just shot yourselves in the foot a couple times?
Yeah, that's what
Brooks
it was.
Interception killed momentum.
The Tyler Shuck fumble where he ran for 49 yards, and then he kept looking over his shoulder, and I feel like he was just scared of getting hurt again. So, where he just ended up losing the ball, and it was bad. That's something we really could have used. I know a lot of people want to dwell on officiating and that. Have you ever in your life seen a double pass interference call?
No.
Like, I think that was really weird. But I'm not going to blame the officials for that game, because we obviously, you got to take responsibility for all the screw-ups that we had. So it is what it is. But the fact that we can screw up on the road in South Bend like we did.
I feel like you may
and
be the,
still had a chance to win that game.
Right, I think talent-wise and on the field-wise, not the errors, not the turnovers, not the mistake, but you all, as far as offensively, were the better team.
I think so. The way they adjusted in the second half to kind of stop Riley Leonard, their run game was, I mean, was that Jeremiah Love? He's good. Like, he's a good running
back.
Dude,
you all got skill players all over.
And, you know, we had some guys missing. They had some guys missing. So, you can't, like, be like, oh, well, Quincy Riley didn't play. Well, they had several guys out. You know, Boubacar Traore, he was eating us alive all game.
Say that again. Say that again.
Boubacar Traore.
Okay.
But what's funny is I know that name so well because Louisville actually has a basketball player named Boubacar Traore. Where
do
they
you
have
yell that in the mirror on game day in the bathroom.
Boubacar Traore.
After you brush your teeth, you're like Boubacar Traore. Boubacar Traore,
also known as Butch Johnson.
Yeah. But he got hurt early.
Also known as BA.
Yeah, he left. He left early. So yeah,
but
anyway.
I know what you're saying, but y'all.
And like I said last week, man, this game it doesn't really matter,
right?
It's
you
just
said that before.
Now
the
we
game.
Have no right. room for error. You have to win one of the two. You can't lose the games you're supposed to win. We got to beat SMU this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. We got to beat Virginia
That's
on the
trappy
road.
Kind of game.
You have to absolutely have to win either at home against Miami or on the road at Clemson. You lose both those games,
yeah,
it's over.
Right.
You got to get one of them.
You got
to
get
And you
got
to win the games that you're supposed to.
Right.
And that's it. So, there's still – we still have a pulse. But we got a lot to clean up. And a lot of – on coaching staff and player-wise.
No matter how you slice it, yes, Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, but – but you knew they were good. That was their mishap, and now they got down to detail, mm-hmm. getting back to crisp football. You all got them at a tough time.
How
right
weird
then.
Do you think it is?
And you all played them tough.
And they were wearing their green jerseys.
That's what I was
dude,
about to say. How
weird
do you think it is that they're like, they prioritized this game
dude,
so much.
Those jerseys were legit.
To where they made this one the green jersey game.
You said that before the season started that they announced that they were wearing green mm-hmm. jerseys for this game, and they never do that.
Yep.
Never.
Normally, the players do not know what color jersey they're wearing until they go back upstairs and they're sitting out for them.
Wow. They let Marcus Freeman let his team pick what they wanted to do, which game they wanted to wear them for this season. And they chose the Louisville game.
I guess because of last year. Because
of last year, they prioritized
this
game. And for them to come out, and as chippy as that game was, and for as bad as we played, I'm very enthusiastic that we still had a shot to win that game late, and we only lost that by 7 points. So, anyway, keep your head up, Cards fans. Things aren't that bad.
No, and golly, that last possession of Louisville.
You know, we got that first down. I don't understand how you go out of bounds and the ball's over the marker, and then when they move the ball into the middle of the field.
I sure thought so.
It was like Jeff Brohm said in his press conference. Like, the ball's right there. Can't you measure it there? Why do you have to carry it into the middle of the field?
Right.
You know, it was a first down. And people were complaining about some of his play calling. They said he went kind of Satterfield. Look, we hired Jeff Brohm to be Jeff Brohm. So I've got no problem with Chaney taking it outside on that carry. I know he's probably the slower of the guys, but you showed your hand earlier when anytime you were going off tackle, you were putting in Duke Watson or Isaac Brown or Kiwan, and you kind of fooled them there. You're like, all right, we're going to put Chaney up. We know that Chaney runs up the middle whenever he gets it. So, and then they took him outside, and I had a little trickeration, but that's what Jeff Brohm does.
Yeah.
It didn't work, but you know what? If it worked, we'd have been calling him a genius.
And I mean, like you said, they were right there, had every opportunity to win that game, even having played probably, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that's the worst, at least first quarter, they're going to play all season long. And
maybe Clemson's starting to scare me a little bit.
Hey, I was going to say, if you really look back at the games, I mean, that we played, we all had some of the toughest games of the weekend. You know what I mean? I really only look at the two games. If y'all want to just clean up the weekend, I think that Kansas State showed that they're a crazy team, inconsistently. But they beat down on Oklahoma State.
They're a different team at home.
That's a pretty good win for them to beat. So they now
and that
Oklahoma
quarterback
State's
situation at Oklahoma
same,
State,
yeah,
it's a mess.
They're in the same situation as some of these other teams that were looking good, and they're down. And then I guess Utah. How about
I'm so sick of
Mr. Electricity's
and this
team.
Situation. Like, this is going on forever and ever,
Arizona,
and I can't deal with it anymore.
And
with the upset.
And I wanted to ask you guys about this because, yeah, the quarterback scenario is infuriating. But the way the coach
is up with that,
the way the coach has dealt with it, is infuriating to me.
It drives me nuts.
He's gone from being one of my favorite coaches to one that I have no, I don't have any interest in listening to.
So tell us
him.
What's happening.
Well,
in a nutshell.
Cam Rising is always hurt, and he will never say that he's hurt.
Okay, so but he's
week to week. It's like, game time decision.
Is he playing him and then he's not, or he's playing and then he's coming out?
I mean, he did this all season last year, and then it wasn't until like week 8 that we found out his family doctor advised him not to play.
So they're just an inconsistent team right now that has talent. Pretty much, right?
They're a defensive team that needs a quarterback.
I mean, the Big 12's crazy.
It is. Iowa State is probably the most consistent team out there.
Love
UCF,
them.
Like, honestly, do we have to step back and look at Colorado
UCF
now?
Just lost. We need.
That's
to
what
start
I'm saying.
About
they're
Colorado.
Bad. Colorado's 4-1 right now.
They're 4-1.
They went to the bounce house and embarrassed a really good Central Florida team.
They did, dude. And that beat a coach like Gus that has crazy offensive plays, meaning their defense played well for Colorado, which is saying something.
And Colorado actually ran the ball a lot this time. So if they can kind of get a run game going, that opens so much for them.
Oh, man. So, yeah, you're right. Some people are
– offensive line actually played pretty damn well for them.
There's some people eating crow right now on Colorado. And,
I know people are fed up with Deion Sanders. But at some point, we have to admit that this guy actually, I believe, is a good coach. When you look at what he did at Jackson State, it was incredible. People forget how bad Colorado was before he got there. What, they won one game, 1-11 before he got there,
right?
And then he starts out like 4-0 last year, upsets TCU. You know, he lost his last 8, but Jesus, man, he had a completely rebuilt team.
He's rolled his sleeves up and went to work, dude. That's
are you over
doing.
Here pulling for San Diego?
I got a lot of money on
Jesus
this
Christ, Jody.
That's bad luck at the bar.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Tuna don't
that
like
is
that.
A, that shot's fired right here.
Hey, don't judge.
Kirk Gibson just rolled over in his grave. That's a Steve Garvey type stuff.
They're counting the Benjamins.
He played for
at the
both
end
of them.
Enjoy it, San Diego.
Do you consider Steve Garvey a Dodger or a Padre?
He's a Dodger. He will always be a
Dodger.
Damn
right.
Do you literally think
should
Atlanta
be
has a shot at winning this series?
Not tonight. I think they do
well,
the next
I'm betting
two.
On tonight's game. That's all I'm doing. Okay. That's all it is. I'm betting on tonight's game.
Well,
I got a lot of money.
I mean, they just flew all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast after playing a doubleheader yesterday. Like, literally, you're pitching for them.
Exactly.
Like,
Is it not smart? Is it not smart to put big money on this
game?
No,
I agree. You bet on it, but we don't celebrate it. It's the Padres.
Now we know why he's not paying attention to the whiteboard.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I thought he had money on the WNBA, but it's the baseball game.
No, I got
Fernando Tatis is, I don't know. He's fine.
So that wraps up
last week
in a nutshell, college football, which we are maniacs.
It does. And
hold on, one more. We got to talk about Miami.
Well, yeah.
And what happened there.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah.
So here's the thing. I was watching that game. That was Friday night, correct? Yes, Friday night. So I was at my parents' house up in Bloomington and was texting Colin back and forth. And I was really watching the Rutgers-Washington game, which was going at the same time. And Colin was keeping me up to date on what was going on in that game. And he was like, oh, my God, you got to flip it over. I think Miami just lost. And so I flipped over, and then I see the last play. Without any rooting interest or anything else, just based on what you saw on that last play, Tuna, was it a touchdown or was it an incomplete pass? I got an answer.
I think that was an incomplete pass. And there was nothing at all that proved otherwise. And as we go on, I honestly believe that there is a conspiracy theory here with the ACC. ACC anytime they have a team.
By the way, I can't wait to hear this.
That has a shot at going undefeated or like to be a considered an elite team.
Like Florida State.
And they go to Charlotte where the officials don't make the call. It's like going to New York in the NFL. They go to Charlotte and let the ACC officials make the call from Charlotte. Whenever that happens, it always favors the elite team. Okay, I've watched Louisville get screwed over by Florida State like this. I've watched Louisville get screwed over by Clemson like this. It's happened. It's going to continue to happen, and it happened the other night. Because Miami is the ACC bread and butter this year, and they want nothing more than an ACC-Clemson ACC championship game, and they're going to do whatever. I guarantee you when we're down in Clemson, if that game's tight, watch for it. We're going to get screwed. When Miami comes here, watch for it. It's going to happen throughout the season. They've done this. It's been going on for years, and I really believe that they're doing anything possible to make some of these teams look more, you know, make sure that they look better than what they are.
But you think they made the right call in this particular instance?
I don't think there was any evidence to change the call on the field.
They called it a touchdown.
Yeah. And
I did not think it was a touchdown.
Did they not? Yeah.
I thought that whatever call was made on the field, you had to stick with it.
I agree with that.
That's what I thought. Mm-hmm.
But why do you review it?
Well, no. I don't think there was enough evidence.
Okay, I know, I get it.
There was nothing that showed
anything. And people that really have seen that, like we have, that's how we're getting like detailed. Like,
I would say, had they called it incomplete on the field, then you just stick with that. But there was an official.
It's not black and white; it's gray.
But there was an official who saw it happen in front of them and said, that's a touchdown, okay?
Yeah.
So now you have to show with the irrefutable evidence that it wasn't. And had it been called the other way, then it would have been totally opposite. But I thought whatever, and I think the announcers, and I even think the rules analyst all thought that. They all thought whatever the call was on the field, you go with the guy who saw it right in front of him. If it takes 6 minutes or whatever it took, then you just say, hey, we can't tell. But that referee that saw it happen live thought it was a touchdown, so we're going to defer to him. And yes. I thought that was probably the way it should have went. And I hate those conspiracy theories, Tuna, but I'm 1,000% on your side. Because I've seen it happen to IU too.
I will say that Cam Ward is the quarterback in college football right now.
Some of those plays he made coming down the stretch were insanity.
And I think Miami kind of got exposed a little bit. They showed some weakness up front.
Which I didn't think they had.
I did not. I was waiting to find a weakness that Miami had, and that kind of showed it. Now, I'm curious to see how they bounce back. They're going to play a pretty decent California team now. And I'm curious how they bounce back because I know they have the talent there. I've always said coaching's probably their biggest concern. And we'll see how they adjust to being exposed the way that they were. And it's there. Now, they have been missing some guys. Reuben Bain has not played. I think Tyler Barron went out early in that game with cramps.
That play was unreal.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. So
I just had to I had to look at it again.
But yeah, I'd say let's give our top three Heisman guys. What's everybody's top three Heisman guys right now?
We talked about it outside. I've got Travis Hunter, number one. I've got Ward, number two. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put Milroe at number three.
Okay. I've got pretty much the same one and two. I think you can flip-flop Cam Ward or Travis Hunter. It could go either way there. And then I'm going to say Ashton Jeanty at number three.
Which is completely legitimate.
Okay. I have maybe a little shocker.
And Nico has to be considered at some point.
Ron Williams should be on there somewhere. Anyway,
I think you have to be at least 18 years old.
Wait, what's his nickname?
Nicknames
for Ron Williams?
I call him the alien.
Alien.
He is
not
from this
child,
planet. Yeah.
Teenage ninja.
Yeah.
I think they go by Hollywood because everybody had the signs up in the stands. Hollywood. Okay. So sorry, Hollywood Brown. You done. I'm going Travis Hunter. I'm going Jalen Milroe second because they're number one in the country right now, and he is the top dog in Vegas. And I'm going on a little limb here because I think this team is better than maybe Alabama and some other teams. I'm going Nico Lamaliva.
Yeah, he's definitely interchangeable.
Because I think
anybody.
Tennessee's going to be in the playoff, and I think he can make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
But he is young. I get it.
Did you nail Jody? the pronunciation?
I think he did.
I did it great.
Say it again.
Lamaliva.
No, that's
Lama
right.
Lamaliva.
No.
Lamaliva.
Lami Aliava.
Lami Aliava.
There you go.
I can't believe he just did it.
I know. I was so impressed.
Fred, that's on that. Lami
Lamaliava.
Now we're struggling.
Don't do it again.
You nailed it once. Go out on top, bro.
You're going to ruin the whole thing.
Lorenzo Lamas.
Mr. Electricity.
I think if Colorado wins four more games and Hunter didn't get hurt, it's not even close. I think he wins.
He's the best player in college football.
That's what the award is supposed to be.
Absolutely.
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
Behind that, number two, I go with Jerry, the quarterback of Tennessee. That guy just makes – He's incredible to watch.
Can you say his name?
No. I'm not going to try.
Just call him Nico.
Lama Elohim. Yeah.
Getting worse. All the soccer names that he can pronounce.
Yeah.
Like, he can, like, pronounce the entire, like, Champions League's roster.
Borussia Dortmund.
See what I'm saying? And, like, but anyway.
International.
Jody. Who else?
I mean, I think that's top two. I don't even look.
You don't
past
think
that.
Cam Ward has got?
I mean, it's a possibility. It all comes down to injury and wins later on in the season. But
we're just saying our top three now.
Somebody to get hurt.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying that.
I think what Cam Ward has done is just it definitely warrants him like. Top three consideration.
I think you put him in there.
He should be on everybody's top three list.
I'm being biased, yeah. And Travis said earlier
you're
he's in the
ACC
top 10
boy.
Now. Rourke, the quarterback at IU, is fun to watch, and they're 5-0.
Sanders should be on some people's boards. If Travis Hunter's that good, Shadur Sanders is the quarterback.
At some point, you have to separate. And I think Cam Ward and Ashton Jeanty and Travis Hunter and Nico have separated themselves from everybody else. I really believe
that. Let me ask you a question. Who the hell's at Jeanty?
He is the running back for Boise State. He's got 840 yards rushing right now in four games.
And looks like he can literally bust a touchdown every time.
Like, he might break the record for seriously, it could happen. So, if he does that, then, like, Ron Dane got it for breaking that record. Ricky Williams got it for doing it.
Yeah.
Who's Noah Fifita?
That's the quarterback in Arizona.
Okay. Mm. There you go, Jody.
Go Wildcats.
There you go, Jody. Yeah, so. Okay. Well, you like Cade Kublik, and he's still up there a little bit, don't you? He's up there.
He's been playing. Like, Clemson will just come out and put up 40 points in a quarter without thinking about it. I don't know. I mean,
I think him and Miller Moss are aliens. You want to talk about two little weird-looking dudes? They look like Daft Punk, them two together.
I
mean, they're freaking
–
Have you ever seen them with their helmets on the sidelines with their helmets off? They look like Daft Punk.
I'm Googling
or,
Daft
or
Punk.
Or whoever. Name a couple of
it's a musical
group.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Oh my goodness!
Who sings "I'm All Out of Love"?
Air Supply.
Yeah, that Air Supply. Two guys. They look like those guys.
Maybe Hall and Oates.
Hall and Oates. Yeah, minus the stash. But no, those two guys just, they have this weird hair. And they're strange looking, man.
Daft Punk.
Miller Moss creeps me out. Seriously.
So I know that this weekend isn't chock full of big time games.
This is a pumpkin patch weekend. This is the weekend you take your family to Huber's and you get your picture taken in front of the bales of hay and the pumpkins.
Unless you're going to Vegas.
And ignore college football.
Or
you
unless,
make your wife happy so you can enjoy good weekends of college football.
Unless you're a Louisville fan, because this is a big, we just talked about it.
This is
a huge game for U of L to continue where they want to go. You have to win this game.
This
period.
Is a team that has really gotten hot. SMU is really clicking. They have turned into the team that we thought that they were going to be.
Right.
They've been putting up a lot of points real quick. This is a scary game. I don't know. They since they sat Preston Stone, I'm trying to think of this other kid's name that's come in, the running quarterback, Kevin Jennings.
Right.
Kevin Jennings. He's been incredible. It was probably the biggest, you know, the best move that they could have done. And they realized early we've got to change, and they're right back to where they was last year. They're kind of – that's a scary team, man.
And what is the line right now?
7. Louisville's a 7-point favorite, and I wouldn't touch it, man. But I got to think that Louisville's probably had one of the most focused weeks of practice. I don't know how banged up we are right now after leaving that Notre Dame game. I know we was banged up going into it. One thing you're not going to find about in college is injuries until game day.
Right.
Which kind of sucks. But one thing I did see was we were able to stop the running quarterback kind of in the second half, and that's the first time we've shown that we could do it this year. So if we can move a little bit of that over into Saturday morning, I could see us getting out of this. But this is going to be a dogfight, man. It's going to be a dogfight. I think we're going to see Shuck put up big numbers in this. I'm not concerned about their defense really at all. This could just be a big shootout, and it's going to be down to Louisville having to make a few stops to get out of this one. So,
well, I can't wait for that game.
Yeah.
We talked about it as one of our as one of your big test games going into the season when we did our local teams. You highlighted this game and.
Well, I think my preseason, I had us going finishing 9-3. I had us losing to Notre Dame, SMU, and Miami, and losing that and then winning out after that. So
I have three games that pretty much you all will not argue that are three tough test games that are this weekend.
Okay.
And I've looked at everybody else, and I don't think that they are as important as these games besides what you just talked about. I think Tennessee going to Arkansas could be a first time, not a first time tester, but just a tricky game for Tennessee.
Arkansas uglies things up.
Right.
They really do.
I'm curious, and I know Tennessee's defense is good, but I do think that Petrino going against them could be a, if that's like a night game or something, it could be kind of crazy.
A night game. It's 7:30.
Okay, and then Miami, here we're just talking about them, at California.
Yep.
Traveling all the way to California after that big win, that big call. And California has a defense. They're coming off a bye, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That could be an interesting game with them way out west. Like, man, we'll find out how mature Miami is. And it's just California. But they're not a bad team. They have a good defense.
No, I agree. They really.
And then, dude, Ohio State at home, and I don't care if they're at home or not, but Iowa coming in off a bye.
3:30 CBS. We get to hear the music.
3:30 CBS. I mean, you know that defense is going to be there. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how they match
up with them.
No, I
agree. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch that one.
Right. So those three really stick out to me.
I think this is the scheduling gods and the baseball gods lining up, because we got playoff baseball going on probably the worst weekend of college football ever. So,
and I do want to say real quickly, and you brought it up, Tune Outside, earlier. Folks, these service academy schools, some of them are damn good, all right? So...
Not Air Force. But everybody else.
But Army and Navy, let me tell you something, guy. They're undefeated, both of them, and they're on a collision course. This being one of the an Army-Navy game, as Tuna said, with what?
There's a...
Playoff implication?
There's a chance that the Army-Navy game could have playoff implications. So they would play a conference championship game the week before, because the Army-Navy game, if I'm correct, it's played the weekend after the conference championship game.
Right, it's the Heisman Trophy the same day as the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, and that's after the conference championship game. Right. So they could play in a conference championship game the weekend before and then play for that as a playoff spot. I don't know. It's going to be pretty wild. Like, that would be – imagine if you go into Army-Navy game with the winner of that getting to go to the playoff.
Right.
How insane would that be?
Oh, yeah,
that would be one of the great weekends of all times in football.
And if you've never watched it, years ago, I think Showtime did a documentary on the Army-Navy game. Probably one of the best documentaries I've watched. From the minute that these men and women enroll there, and the hell that they go through on their first week, and then what they do to prepare for this rivalry game, it's absolutely nuts.
John Feinstein wrote a great book about
it,
too. Yeah.
Okay, that's your college football wrap-up, Travis.
Yeah, and...
I didn't even look on the Friday games or the... We know we love UNLV.
You're not worried
Syracuse.
About Bama traveling to the construction site to
no,
play
Vandy?
No, I don't
even want to talk about it.
Okay, I wouldn't want to talk about it either.
But I just wondered, were there games on Friday, Saturday that really stuck out? Sometimes there are. I haven't looked.
Well, I'm going to say right now because... Well, yeah, so... UNLV, which we talked about a few weeks ago, last time I was in Vegas, I made a huge mistake and bet against them and lost. I will not be making that mistake again. I can promise you that.
I think there's a game you haven't
mentioned. Well, I can assure you to bet Texas State on Thursday and Sam Houston State on Thursday, and you will win. Take both of the favorites.
Are you going to talk about Ole Miss in South Carolina?
I mean, that one's curious. I think, no, I was actually going to say Missouri, Texas A&M. I think that's the game of the whole weekend
that I really want to
watch.
Good call, Jody.
That's probably the best
but
game.
Honestly,
that is a good game.
Do you guys think that, like, Missouri is that good of a football team, though? I don't think they are.
I think Texas A&M's crap.
I think they're crap.
I don't look at it that way.
Texas A&M's actually a 2-point favorite in that game.
Yeah, whether it's
two good teams or two bad teams.
I just think it's a game to
watch. That was a good win, though. We thought Arkansas was reeling the other way.
And I think Ole Miss going to South Carolina, they roll South Carolina this weekend.
Well, I think Georgia rolls, too. I think Ole Miss and Georgia bounces back at home, no problem.
I think Williams-Brice Stadium is going to be hopping, and you got a lot of pressure on Lane Kiffin now. You can't lose two SEC games.
I don't think he's going
to You can't lose back-to-back. I know you could say that, but, like, that's a – you know, they get Sandstorm going. That's a crazy place to play. You got to admit, South Carolina, for being a mediocre football program, their fans and that stadium and that atmosphere is about as good as it gets in college football.
Right, so. And then you got Pitt trying to go 5-0, Mr. ACC.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's exciting stuff.
Oh, God. Terrible. Anyways, yeah. I love my Texas State, and I love my Sam Houston State, and love both those schools right now. UTEP's horrible, and so is Troy.
But it's funny.
On Thursday night.
We sit here and talk about it. There's not that many good games this weekend, but when you really die, there's not – big names playing big names is what it is.
I think there's still a lot of good football.
It's a college football fans.
I think Travis
where you
is
got to be
agree
a junkie
with me
to get into
that. On Friday night at 9, Michigan State and Oregon. That's just obviously Oregon's in the Big Ten now, but that's just a strange game. When was the last time you see Michigan State traveling to Oregon at
night? It is a weird
late
game.
Night?
Well, we have a former Oregon State head coach traveling out to Autzen Stadium again.
Yeah,
so,
there you go. That's an interesting game.
Michigan State is no
not
good.
Good. Yeah, they don't have any players. He has nobody yet.
They're not good.
I think he's done a hell of a coaching job with what he has right now.
I agree. Of course, I'm going to say that, you know, as much as Indiana has played well this year, and I know on Freddie's card they're favored by, I think, 16 points, but Indiana has not won at Northwestern since the early 90s. And it's always a weird game. This year we're playing in that weird temporary stadium.
Cool as
hell.
I would stay in that stadium.
No, it's totally awesome. Yeah.
It's 13.5 right now online.
Boy, I bet the wintertime games up there is going to be miserable. Right there on that
which
river.
Which is must-see TV.
Yeah.
It's must-see TV.
Smart kids just hurting.
So, to me, obviously, that's the biggest game of the weekend. That's to me. Because I think it's going to be a tough game. And when we get to the end of
it's somewhat of a trap. You have Nebraska next week. It is kind of
when
a
when we get to the end of the
game.
Show, we'll talk about our picks and everything. But I am super excited to watch that game and very interested to see what happens. before we get any further, I did want to mention, and we talked about it briefly at the beginning of the show, we found out yesterday that Pete Rose passed away. And for those of you that may not know, I'm a lifelong Reds fan. Freddie's a Reds fan. Jody's a Reds fan. And we're all old enough, like, I can remember... I don't really remember Pete the first time he played for the Reds. My knowledge of Pete comes when he was with the Phillies in the early 80s. And then, of course, he comes back to the Reds as player manager. I'll never forget that season that he broke the all-time hits record because the games were on in Bloomington on free television. On Channel 4. And so we watched all those games, me and my dad, you know, keeping track of how many hits he had and all that stuff. And obviously he has a very complicated legacy, which you can go anywhere on the internet and look up anything you want to. But I'm just want to say that Pete Rose is one of my all-time favorite baseball players. I have no particular argument whether he should or should not be in the Hall of Fame. That is not for me to decide, but, I'm very sad that he passed away, but I'm very glad that, you know, he played baseball one way and, probably a way that isn't necessarily played that much anymore. And, R.I.P. Pete.
I'll say this. If every player in baseball played baseball the way that he played, it would be the most popular sport in America. Without a question. Everybody would watch baseball like it's the NFL right now.
Right.
It's, I mean, he was.
Yeah, nobody played harder every play, every game.
And when you think about his injury history by playing that way, like it wasn't there. You know what I'm saying? Like we've got guys that have come through and played hard like that. That can't stay healthy, i.e. Mike Trout. You know what I mean?
Think about how many singles he got just gutting it out to first.
Yeah. Well, head first slides like it's nothing. Like,
but he got his name Charlie Hustle for, you know, he's an all-time doubles leader.
Yeah. Right, right.
That's why he got his
name.
And the bad part about it, obviously the gambling, but the All-Star game when he ended the grass career, but he was playing the way he played the whole time. So mm-hmm. you can look at it two different ways.
No, he's
neither
like
here nor there.
He's a competitive guy. He's like, when I'm playing this game, I'm going all out. And that's how it is.
What's crazy is I was talking to Tuna about this earlier. Last night was the last game of the regular season for this year, and Carl Ravitch is in the booth with Eduardo Perez. Carl Ravitch found out because his dad, Tony, that played with Pete Rose, texted him and said, Pete just died.
Wow.
And Eduardo Perez said, Carl Ravitch said he had tears in his eyes, and he goes, all my birthday parties were at Pete Rose's house.
Wow.
It's like he was like another dad to me. So, end of the season, you know, whatever, however you look at that. But
yeah, and, you know, I mean, we can get into everything. I mean, I guess the good comes with the bad with Pete. But, you know, I wanted to hear what a lot of the national people had to say and what side they were on and how they handled discussing, and of course Tim Kirchner and them are total pros and baseballers. They think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I thought Stephen A had a really, really huge emotional take that he was so bitter that Pete Rose was not in the Hall of Fame. And it didn't surprise me. It just surprised me how passionate that he was about it. Saying that baseball has gotten it, the Major League Baseball has gotten in with DraftKings and all this stuff, and they're riding all these people's coattails, and you couldn't have a ceremony for Pete Rose to get in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he admitted that he did wrong on national television, and then
the problem was,
you know,
he waited 15 years
right
to admit or more that he had done that. But like I said, that's neither here nor there.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, the things that Pete Rose did were unbelievable. It was on TV. They were showing his hits on TV mm-hmm. and stopping shows.
They
on
would break into, yeah.
Like, and this is before, you know, like ESPN was something special. And it was incredible. And then, you know, we're getting ready to check it. They'd have it under the ticker and all that. It was amazing.
So there's quotes out there from Jack Nicklaus, that played, obviously, the golfer. They said, you know, is this the hardest thing to do? And he said, no, I put my little white ball on a tee. It's sitting still. Hitting a baseball is. Michael Jordan has that same basic statement at one point, and Pete Rose was the best that ever did that. Just to give you clarification on how great his feat was.
Right. Unbelievable.
And so, obviously, the fact that we lost Pete, and I saw a lot of very unique perspectives from some of his teammates. Marty Brenneman had a really nice thing that he said last night. But, you know, these guys, especially as we're getting to this time of our era, these guys are literally, I mean, Pete is one of the last of a breed, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, you know, love him, hate him, and there's reasons to do both. But Pete Rose was we throw this term around, I think, a little bit too much, but he's an icon,
mm-hmm.
and not just of baseball. He's an icon of American sport for a multitude of reasons.
And I will have his jersey on like I do now in Vegas, where he passed this weekend. I'm looking forward to wearing it.
And Fred, I'm going to tell you a real quick story. About a decade ago, I was in Las Vegas for Rush's last tour. Rush's last concert, or their last concerts on that tour. and I was staying at Mandalay Bay, and Pete and Steve Garvey were doing an autograph signing. If you've ever been to Mandalay Bay, there's that like that little
Charlie
mall
Hustle,
area.
Mr. Clean.
And they were in that card shop, like signing or whatever.
He was always signing autographs.
So anyway, Pete, after they're done, I'm sitting waiting for my friend to come down. I'm sitting in the sports book. There's nothing sports-wise on but baseball. And Pete comes and sits directly in front of me. And he gets up to walk to the window, and I just know he's betting on baseball. And so I walked up right behind him, and I heard him tell the guy, he was like, this on the Royals, this on the Giants, this on the whatever it was. And then he went and sat down, and the guy said, what are you going to bet? And I said, just give me whatever Pete's got. And the guy looked at me kind of funny, and I said, give me whatever Pete's got for $5 a bet. Mm. And he goes, okay. And he ended up printing out this ticket. It was like 20 tickets. And
oh, my Lord.
And Pete sat back down, and I had an opportunity to go up and talk to him, but I didn't want to bother him. So I just walked up past him, and I showed him my ticket, and I said, let's get him, Pete. And we fist bumped, and then I went and sat down. And that was my interaction with Pete. But I know, and God bless him, I know he had a problem with it, but I know in 2014, he still had a bead on some baseball bets.
I love it. I love it.
I know we're through college. Do we want to talk about the NFL a little bit?
Or baseball, one of the
well,
NFL,
no.
NFL's a quick go. I just want to say it's a shit show right now. There's everybody looks good one weekend and trash the next. They look like trash one weekend and great the next.
That's how the NFL is.
It's week to week. You have awful quarterback play continues. Right now, you have Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield as the two best quarterbacks in the NFL, and I'm sure everybody predicted that. I think we are
several
weeks away from everyone
Saquon Barkley
separating themselves out and to where who looks like contenders and who doesn't. I think at the end of the day,
the Lions look tough.
The Lions and the Seahawks, both. Seahawks could be a contender. Obviously, Minnesota, the Lions. Tampa, you don't know what you're going to get. Saints, you don't know what you're going to get each week. This weekend coming up, it's a good matchup. The Chiefs are actually going down to New Orleans to play the Saints on Monday night. And, you know, that could be a situation for the Chiefs.
That's going to be a hell of a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's you just don't know. I haven't seen anything stellar from a quarterback on a consistent level besides Sam Darnold.
I think the NFL, to sum it up, is survive and move on.
It is.
Get past your injuries, move on. Hopefully you get a win make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, Texans-Buffalo is going to be a hell of a game. I think Ravens, of course, Ravens and Bengals coming off a good win. Both of them, the Ravens are just purring along now.
And the big news is Devontae Adams requested a trade.
Right.
So you can imagine where he's going to go. I would assume that he's going to end up in New Orleans because they could use him down there, and it puts him back with Derek Carr, his college roommate buddy and all that. Derek Carr, or I think Devontae Adams was quite upset when Derek Carr was kind of forced out of Vegas. So I could see a reunion there. I know a lot of people are saying Jets. I just don't know if that's going to happen. But I think the Saints make the most sense. But you never know with the NFL. Anything could happen. That is about it with the NFL.
And before we go any further, I quickly wanted to say that last week, we as a collective were 12-5-1 on
damn
our
right.
Bets.
We have been hot if people didn't know it.
And then Freddie's 7 unders that he picked last week, he went 5-2.
Let's go.
So that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. LFG.
We are getting...
Is that an airport?
Yeah. What airport is LFG?
LFG. Let's freaking go. LFG.
Hmm. I didn't know.
I don't think there's an airport That's code, LFG.
Lufthansa. I
I'm on a texter and they send LFG. And I'm like, what's that mean? Let's freaking go.
You're
I'm
on
like,
there with some youngins, aren't you?
LFG. Now I'm LFG.
There's Tom Brady talks like
That's
that.
That's Nate and the boys. Just young boys give them a shout like out. Give Nate and the boys a shout out. They're listeners. LFG, baby.
It's RNLFGLOL is what it says.
Now, we do have a little bit of time here at the end of the show, so I'm going to kind of expand our typical last call because I know we have a few things we haven't touched on. But I'm going to go ahead and call last call, and I'm going to start with the fabulous one.
Just want to give a shout out to the Team USA for a great win in the President's Cup. You know, our opponent came back on Saturday with a we were up 5-0. They came back, or maybe Friday. Friday. They came back 5-0, tied it up 5-5, and time to go to battle. And I think the fans got a little crazier there in Montreal. And shout out to Gary Carter. Montreal, they got loud. They got more emotional. I think the Koreans got a little crazy and started playing great golf. But in the end, Scheffler and the boys took care of business. And congrats to the Team USA for winning the President's Cup for, what, the 11th time in a row now. And on to the Europeans. I got my picks, Jody. If you want to go into my unders, I have three tonight. I have four unders. Wake Forest at NC State. I will take that under at 54.5. It may have changed, but I will take that under. Just put a U by it. Central Florida and Florida. I'll take that under 61. I think Gus's defense can stop Florida a little bit. Kansas at Arizona State, under 50. I'll take that. And then Miami at Cal, and that defense at home, 54 under. And then my picks. I've already given you the two on Thursday night. Texas State, Sam Houston State, UNLV on Friday. That's just on the side. Let's go Toledo at home, giving Miami 7. I'll take Toledo on that. I will take the Indiana Hoosiers.
Oh, baby.
Hold on. Because I don't think I've had a chance to take them yet.
Toledo's getting 7 or... taking 7.
They're giving 7. I am not worried about Northwestern. I don't think this is a trap game or anything. Forget Nebraska. Northwestern's horrible. Bring it on. I like that one. Okay, and then we're going to go. I'm going with the Navy at Air Force, giving them 9. I will take the Navy midshipmen. That's 3, right?
Yep.
Okay. Roll Tide.
All right.
Tuna.
Well, we all know baseball playoffs is going on.
Oh.
We didn't mention that once tonight. So, I mean, this is the wild card series. This is a best of 3. It's going to be over with by Friday. So, these are going to be fun.
It's an exciting time, dude. What about the Braves? The Braves.
That doubleheader yesterday was insane. Absolutely incredible. Game 1 was phenomenal. I kind of thought game 2 would be a pushover. Whoever won the first one would probably lay low a little on the second.
Right.
But still, that first one, you could tell both teams wanted it. It was a dogfight down there. I like Francisco Lindor is just incredible to watch. I'm a big fan of his. I guess the biggest thing now is we're all of America's rooting for Houston and San Diego to lose and get out of there. But And then also a quick shout out to Tommy Mattinson. Do you know who that is, Freddie?
No.
Okay. The look on your face made me think that maybe you
did. Well,
you
I look know like some Mattinson.
You look like a big fan of Gurning, the Gurning competition.
I don't
Are
know.
Are you familiar
I,
with
I,
what Gurning is?
I know what a gurney is, but not Gurning.
Okay. At the Crab Festival in Ergamont, England, which is the oldest festival in all of the world. This is the oldest competition dating back to the 1200s.
Not the cheese roll down
nope,
the hill.
No, this is called gurning. Okay. And what gurning consists of is contorting your face to make it look as ugly as humanly possible while shoving it through a horse collar.
Good Lord.
And
you have too much free time alone to look this shit up.
Tommy Mattinson has won his 19th straight
no way
gurning competition.
Well, what's his odds?
He is just an incredible athlete, probably the GOAT at his
is
craft.
Like Joey Chestnut.
He is the Joey Chestnut of gurning. Shout out to Tommy Mattinson for keeping that going. We're all rooting for you next year too, buddy. I'm sure our listeners in Leeds are big fans of gurning.
George.
Yes. They watch Leeds football, and they gurn. They do a lot of gurning on their free time. So,
I apologize to all our listeners in Leeds.
Wow, they love it.
Apparently you love it.
All right, let's win some money now. This is going to be easy. We're not overthinking this weekend. We got three straight easy ones. We're starting out with Clemson going to Tallahassee as 14.5-point favorites. Clemson is a different team than what played Georgia. They have gotten it together. That offense is clicking. Florida State is as awful as you think they are on a weekly basis, and Clemson's going to win this. You can even take an alternate spread on this up to 24, I think. But we're going to bet it at 14.5. And go with Clemson. Clemson is minus 14.5, Jody. Then we're going to go to...
I like the alternate route. That's real ballsy.
Yeah. I did it with Indiana 2 weeks ago and put it at 38, and I'll be damned if they didn't win right at 38 for a push. That made me sick a little bit. And then we're going to go down to Fayetteville, Arkansas, where Nico and the Tennessee Volunteers are coming into town.
Oh.
And I'm sorry, Bobby Petrino, and I'm sorry, Cover King Sam Pittman. This is not your week. I think Tennessee puts on an absolute display on primetime Saturday night.
Okay.
Tennessee's taking that one. And then we're going to move over to Ames, Iowa.
Uh-oh.
Where Baylor looked a little feisty last week, and they're going in to play
what?
Iowa State. We're taking the Cyclones to cyclone the hell out of the Bears.
Damn right.
To cover the 12 points.
Damn
and
right.
win that there
I was,
at home.
That was one that I, if I didn't take Navy, I was taking that one, babe. You know, hey, look at that under, too. Love that under. I was
45.
Iowa State's my under squad, number one. My number one under squad.
What now, about that 44.5 for Iowa, Ohio State?
Not bad. It's just like that other one.
I wouldn't touch it, man.
But that's a ballsy under bet. Yeah. I've been going. With
no, you had some good ones
50
earlier.
50 or over.
Yeah, that's the best play. Anything in the 40s is just too spooky.
Now we go to Mr. Electricity.
Well, Fred, I had to change your Navy because I don't know what you're looking at. It's not minus 9, it's minus 10, and it's current online, so I'll move that.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to win.
back to who we lost this week. We briefly brought him up. Dikembe Mutombo, we lost him at 58. Actually met the guy. He actually told me a story. I was at Houston Rockets in the locker room during one of their practices. He was originally going to the University of Kentucky.
Wow.
But the only reason he went to Georgetown is because the only family they had here, his uncle was a doctor in D.C. So that's the reason he did not go to UK. But as we walked out, he was like, go Cats. He played with Scott Padgett at Houston right, for a few years.
That's cool. I can always remember him laying on his back with that basketball.
Dude, guys.
When they upset. Who they upset, Travis? He's going, laying on the ground with that basketball for
that
the Nuggets.
That was when he played for the Nuggets and they upset the Supersonics.
I just remember the commercial where he was running around the grocery store smacking, like, groceries out of people's hands. Because
like, he used to do that, remember? And then they started giving him a technical every
finger
time
wave,
So another little story about he wore a size 22, but growing up, they didn't have shoe, obviously, to fit his feet. His toes were curled up like this underneath, and
like Scott, a mountain cat,
like under because his that's like the way
that's where you went to it.
And
a mountain cat.
Scott said if he straightened his toes out, he would have wore a 25.
Wow,
his toes were curled up like he had the ugliest. It's I don't even want to go there. Anyway, I'm going to my picks.
Hammer toes.
I got IU over 42. I got IU minus 13.5, and I got UNLV minus 6.5. Those are my three picks this week.
Isn't that a 7-point spread?
6.5. I just looked it up.
Okay.
Colin has Oregon State minus 10.5. He's going Freddie under 41.5 in the Rutgers game.
Oh, another good under team.
He's taking West Virginia plus 3.5.
I'm going the opposite way.
Man.
And he said, of course, I'm taking Indiana. He had a minus 13.5.
Sorry, I took that one.
I'm going all Big Ten this week.
Oh, baby.
That's
Illinois.
Exciting.
Look out, Illinois. Illinois,
I have,
how about that
these are
going to
be some
cover?
Big covers.
How about that Illinois cover?
He's.
I have Michigan State plus 24.
Whoa, I knew that was coming.
Whoa.
I have
Penn State.
UCLA plus 28.
Okay.
What?
Well, yeah, that's the... that is against Penn State. I have UCLA plus 28 against Penn State.
I'm going to be with you in Vegas when you're singing your sorrows.
And then I have Minnesota.
Oh, my
plus
Lord.
Plus 8.5 at home against USC, who I still don't think is that good. I may be wrong.
I don't know,
but
Travis.
I don't think they're that good. And I don't think they're going to come in there and blow them out.
I tell you what, I think Minnesota kind of impressed me a little bit at Michigan. I know that they got beat up a little bit, but they were physical, man.
They came back.
They were very physical and resilient.
I like that bet, Travis.
Yeah. I could see USC being just confused as hell by that style of play.
8.5 is a lot of points.
But they're very similar. They're very
similar to UCLA.
To the way that Michigan plays. And UCLA went in and embarrassed Michigan. So it's like.
You're right.
I don't know. But yeah, I like the call.
Well, I don't think Penn State can score enough points to cover 28.
I agree.
How much did Indiana beat UCLA by?
42-13.
That's right.
They beat them worse than any other team in the Big Ten has. Mm-hmm. So,
is that game at UCLA?
It's at Penn State.
Yeah, I think I might go Penn State to cover that one.
That's a lot of points. Yeah.
How can you not bet the IU over at 42?
I'm not touching IU until I get to Vegas. I may or may not bet I may or may not make my entire trip.
I'll tell you why. Northwestern's horrible.
Dependent on whether Indiana covers that spread or not, but we'll talk about that later. Guys, anybody have any last thoughts here tonight?
I will be dipping my hot dog and some High Noon.
We've been hearing this every week for like the last month.
But it's going to be at Clemson. One day I'll get all three of y'all at the Capstone to watch a damn game. We'll see what happens.
Well, it's
we've all been there at least twice.
Yes. That's a fact.
Together?
Yes.
Well, someone bring it up.
You were cooking hot dogs the one day, the last time I was there.
I asked him this weekend, and of course, neither one of you were there. He goes, I'm going to do my poet. I say, nope, we got to have one other person here.
It's got to be
a hot dog.
That is true.
Also,
that is true.
Go Dodgers this time next week. We will be knee deep in the divisional series, NLDS. Against either the Padres or the Braves.
And Ohtani will be pitching.
And I will have some photos of Freddie and I in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Watch out, folks.
Cannot wait for that.
Hanging out at the – we'll be at the Link in case anybody's interested, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be at the Link at the pool, hanging out, doing a little – I'm going to try to win my roulette. Record from last time at the Flamingo. Yes,
that is correct.
All right, guys.
See if you guys can get some of the money back that I gave them in March.
Yeah, we're gonna work on that.
Yeah, just ask them. Be like, hey, Tuna left some money.
We're gonna work on that, guys. Awesome episode tonight. Can't wait for this weekend to see what happens relative to college football. We will be back here next Tuesday. Don't forget, it's the Hump Day Happy Hour on Wednesdays when we release this show at about 3:50 p.m. Available wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Want to thank everybody for listening. Want to thank everybody for being down here tonight for Mr. Electricity, the big fellow, the Tuna Country, Matt Kemp. And the fabulous one, Freddie Benders. This is Travis Carter saying, so long, everybody.